Happy Native American Heritage Month, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are hearing KGVM Bozeman Community Radio broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and I am your host, Roxana. As we are coming off of Halloween weekend, let's look back to November 11th, 2018. We open today with Culmination of the Pleiades.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert in this beautiful and haunting time of year, when here in the northern hemisphere, days are short and nights are especially dark. In the old Celtic lands of Europe and the British Isles, it is a time when it is said that we can reach through the veil that usually separates us from the other side. Astronomically, it is the darkest time of the year. And if you love the season but are put off by the cheap, loud vulgarity of modern Halloween, take heart. The old Halloween marks the cross-quarter day, midway between the equinox and the solstice. For the Celtic tribes, this was the beginning of the season. And over the centuries, we've messed with the calendar here and there. Seasonal to Gregorian to Julian, what used to be October 31 is now November 7. The true cross-quarter day, right in the middle between autumn equinox and winter solstice. Maybe that's why we have election day at the same time of year. It is a scary time. At one time of year, we suddenly realize people we've long thought dead are actually sort of barely alive. Sort of held together with the devil's magic and duct tape. Lumbering about, terrifying the children. Running for re-election in our district, it's terrifying. The Druids may have put particular importance on this particular cross-quarter night because of the annual culmination of the cluster of stars we call the Pleiades, or Seven Sisters, which a thousand years ago would have happened at midnight on the old calendar's October 31. Now, ancient cultures around the world thought the Pleiades were very important. There in the old religion of the Greeks, as the seven daughters of Atlas. And they are mentioned in the Old Testament twice in the book of Job. And the Hebrew scholars of old believe Moses got special knowledge of this cluster of stars. Knowledge from God when they talked upon the mountaintop. And because of this knowledge, it was known in ancient Israel that these stars, which are 444 light years away, were more numerous than we could see. When Galileo first used a telescope to view the cluster in the year 1610, he counted 36 stars. By the year 1779, the number of known stars in the cluster had nearly doubled to 64. Moses was apparently told of 100 stars in this cluster, this closest cluster to Earth. And if you look at the website astronomy.com in our time, you'll see the Seven Sisters described as a cluster of 100 or more stars. Moses was right. The ancient Japanese spoke of six stars. Because even though the Greeks named the stars the Seven Sisters, there are only six visible to the naked eye. Especially now with all the light pollution and the smoke from the wildfires. Those six stars of the Pleiades remain very meaningful in Japan. Subaru borrowed the star cluster for its car logo. Because Subaru is a Japanese name for the group, it means to unite. You have to wonder what our ancient ancestors knew about the Seven Sisters, why it was so important. Important enough to make Halloween the holy night of the Pleiades culmination in the autumn sky. Maybe we were visited. Maybe we're still being visited. Those stars appeared only 100 million years ago when dinosaurs ruled the world. Some would say their direct descendants, the ravens, the crows, the corvids, still rule the world. But then the dinosaurs died out, the big ones anyway, and a completely new species of animal appeared on Earth, the primates. The earliest mammals that were something like primates appeared about 65 million years ago. Monkeys about 30 million years later. And now here we are, trying to figure out if we can kill ourselves and everything else on Earth in just a couple of hundred years. If you want to improve your Halloween experience, next time, skip the fake blood and the movie character costumes and hold your own celebration on Cross Quarter Night. This is a good time to be outside in the desert in the cool fall night. Especially up in the high desert where it's sometimes even cold enough to put on a sweater if you can find one. And that's a good time of year because you can set out some lanterns and you don't have to worry so much about scorpions crawling up your legs. And the sky is often clear, often clean. Relatively clean, anyway. Invite some people over and do whatever it is you do. Sit outside and talk about the end of the world. Pick out the constellations. Watch for shooting stars and UFOs. Go up to the mountains and bring home some hard apple cider. Maybe have some kind of ritual at midnight with the Pleiades overhead. Tell some ghost stories around the campfire. Listen for the coyotes. Watch for the shadows of the owls. The Cross Quarter Day will be November 7 in 2019, too. It's called Samhain or Samhain or Soin, depends on your particular Celtic pronunciation, your particular tribe. Americans sometimes say Samhain due to the way it's spelled. And due to the fact that Glenn Danzig once had a band of the same name, and because horror punk record covers rarely come with Gaelic pronunciation guides. As for the culmination of the Pleiades this year, it hasn't yet happened, but it is coming soon. November 21, midnight. That's a real Halloween. It has become fixed upon our calendars, our miserable Google calendars and Outlook calendars and school calendars. But our solar system is in motion, and so is our galaxy. So over time, over the past couple of thousand years, the night of culmination has moved forward a couple of weeks in our autumn season. While the date is stuck, whether October 31 or November 7. So mark your calendars for the night of November 21. Then watch for the Seven Sisters as they appear in the northeastern sky. Who knows what might happen under those mysterious stars. Who knows what it really means when that cluster of very close stars is right on top of us? Up through the darkness, while ravening clouds, the burial clouds, in black masses spreading. Lower sullen and fast athwart and down the sky, amid a transparent clear belt of ether, yet left in the east. Ascends large and calm the Lord Star Jupiter, and nigh at hand, only a very little above, swim the delicate sisters, the Pleiades. Walt Whitman, On the Beach at Night, 1871. Tonight I've watched the moon and then the Pleiades go down. The night is now half gone, youth gone. I am in bed, alone. Well, that one carries some weight for the middle-aged reader. That one is by Sappho, written on a Greek isle 570 BC.
Like everywhere, we've got monsters in the desert. And like everywhere, they are not animals that you can catch or cage or shoot, despite the bozo documentaries on cable TV. But they do appear. They do frighten people. They occasionally do attack people. And everywhere you go in this desert, there is a local version of the story. These mountains right behind us hold one of the best-known stories, and it's a name you'll hear all over this town. And it's Taquitz, who is said to have been a shaman who turned to evil and then turned into a monster. This one appears two ways, as an orb of green, staticky light, a ball of green light that will follow and chase you down these canyons. And the other is of an immense, shaggy beast, 7 or 8 feet tall, red lights for eyes. We were talking about this particular desert Sasquatch last year here, and a woman came up to me afterwards and explained how she and her best friend had hiked that trail, as it was a place she liked to go and sit and meditate. And on one particular occasion, they went up there and the bushes and the brush all around them started thrashing around even though there wasn't any wind. And they got this feeling of terrible dread. And so they started running down the trail. And as they ran down the trail, the brush and the bushes around them were thrashing in front of them and alongside of them all the way down. She said she no longer went there to meditate. At Edwards Air Force Base, there are a couple of different versions of this monstrosity, and the names are especially dumb because they were named by base police who were trying to sound cool to each other. Now, that's a big base up there. Most of it consists of immense dry lakes with runways that go into the lakes. And because there have been so many secret black aircraft that have been tested and developed there, they are very careful about security. They don't want any spies from the Russian Air Force or any other potential rival getting a look at our next jet fighter or stealth fighter. So in the 1970s, it was a group of police who patrolled the area. They were known as the Desert Rats, officially the Base Air Force Police Patrol of a unit, which I do not remember the number of. And the guys on the night shift were bedeviled throughout the 1970s. Sensors would go off, alarms would go off, security cameras would pick something up, wires would be tripped, and they'd send a couple of these poor guys out in a little pickup truck out into the dry lake bed to where whatever was happening was supposed to be happening. And they'd get out and they'd see a pair of blue eyes like blue lasers hovering about 8 feet over the ground. They couldn't make out anything else, no shape of a body, no anything. And as they'd approach it, the eyes would move around. And then they'd lose track of it and it would be behind them. The one sergeant who made a formal report was so mocked by his fellow officers that nobody else ever made a formal report. And this was revealed when these guys had a reunion in 2008 on base. And it was reported in the base newspaper, which is called Inside Edwards. These guys talking about their experiences with that particular creature, which they called Old Blue Eyes, after Frank Sinatra. Another version of this creature that they would encounter, again, never seeing the actual thing, but hearing it, knowing that security measures had been triggered, they called Marvin of the Mojave. Marvin of the Mojave left one specific kind of evidence, and that was footprints in the dry lake bed that looked like about a size 15 sneaker. Marines from 29 Palms, who would go up to Big Bear to cool off in the summer, began telling the story of the cement factory monster in the late 1970s, early 1980s. A big ugly cement factory on the side of the mountain there, the north side of the San Bernardinos that you can see from Lucerne Valley, now owned by Mitsubishi. It's been in operation for a long time. It's where a lot of the gravel and rocks and concrete that make up all of our Southern California highways and freeways come from. They were coming down from Big Bear, had a bunch of beer in the car and thought they might want to drink that off before they got back to base. So they pulled off on the gravel road into the cement factory. And they got down to a point in the road where they were shielded from view from the road and hopefully from security. And at the point they were going to get out and consume their beer, an absolute monster appeared in the headlights. Again, 8, maybe 10 feet tall, arms swinging, eyes glowing. Now they nearly backed into a gravel pile, turned around, tires spinning, and in their rearview mirror, they saw the thing running after them, keeping up with them, 45 miles an hour down the gravel road. There's now a fence. You can no longer enter. And then in Joshua Tree in Yucca Valley in 29 Palms, we have our beloved Yucca Man, the desert Sasquatch of the high desert. A ritual for new Marines on the 29 Palms base is to be sent out on your first night into the open desert to confront the Yucca Man, who on base is almost always one of their comrades in one of those camouflage suits with the strings hanging down everywhere. They jump out from behind a yucca, scare the hell out of the new recruit, and the legend continues. The thing was, there was an actual Yucca Man on base as the base expanded. It was adjunct to Camp Pendleton initially. And the most consistent story you hear is of a guard working at the old rifle range, and something came up behind his little guard shed. He turned on his flashlight and saw nothing. He heard it to his side. He left his little guard booth bravely and shined his flashlight around. And he saw it just for a minute, towering over him, stinking like rotten eggs, sulfur, the eyes glowing. And one of these massive limbs slammed him right in the head, and that's where they found him several hours later, with his sidearm bent in half. There's only one picture that's ever been taken of Yucca Man that I've ever seen, anyway. It was taken at the Jumbo Rocks campground in Joshua Tree. And it shows on the rocks a kind of large, loping primate of some kind. There are reports of people waking up in the night hearing the zipper of their tent being slowly pulled up as their eyes began watering from the terrible smell of rotten eggs. So lock your doors tonight. Thank you all for coming out to this Halloween campfire stories. It's a good night for such stories. The plan is we will do these again on the last Wednesday of November and the last Thursday of December and the last Thursday of January. They're on the Ace Hotel calendar, and if I have the dates right, I will mention them on the radio show. There's a Desert Oracle radio show that broadcasts Friday nights at 10 p.m. in Joshua Tree on 107.7 FM, KCBZ. And that's really the best way to hear the show. You can hear it driving through Mojave National Preserve, kind of coming in and out as the mountains block the signal, right before they get you, right before the satanic cult pulls you out of your car.
Yeah.
You can enjoy some quality radio on the FM. It's a podcast as well on iTunes and etc.
Just over a year ago, in October 2017, the first interstellar object ever detected within our solar system was discovered by a sharp-eyed astronomer named Robert Warrick at Hawaii's Pan-STARRS telescope. But it had already shot by Earth before it was noticed, and some detective work revealed that the thing had dropped into our solar system from above. And then took a gravity assist from the sun to zip right past Earth. We almost missed it completely. Who knows how many times this slender, cigar-shaped mystery object has made self-flybys. Who knows how many more of them there are. We don't know much about it, is what I mean. It doesn't look or act like a comet, and it doesn't look or act like any asteroid we've ever noticed before. And because of this, a new designation had to be made by the International Astronomical Union, I for Interstellar. So while we know it as Oumuamua, Hawaiian for a scout from afar, you can also call it 1I, the first known interstellar object. That it sounds a lot like the spaceship disguised as a weirdly narrow asteroid in the Arthur C. Clarke novel Rendezvous with Rama, published in 1973, is just one of those things. And this week, an academic paper was published by two scientists with the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics suggesting that the oddball traveler is a space probe from an alien civilization. Honestly, that's what I figured all along. If you like the stories about our desert monsters, I'll be telling some more of these tales for the Morongo Basin Historical Society's Second Wednesday Lecture Series, Wednesday, November 14, 5:30 p.m. on the dot. Get there a little early if you want a seat. It's at the High Desert Nature Museum right there at Demosa and Highway 62 in Yucca Valley. $5 donation at the door goes to the Historical Society. You've been listening to Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree, Fridays at 10 p.m. across the Mojave on KCDZ 107.7 FM from Amboy to Zizek's. Thanks to Red Blue Black Silver for the eerie soundscapes. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Visit us online at desertoracle.com. Good night from the voice of the desert.
According to earthsky.org, this year, Halloween itself was traditionally a cross-quarter day. But as Ken Lane said, the true cross-quarter day is November 7th, and the midnight culmination of the Pleiades is November 21st. And this week's full moon on Wednesday, November 5th, is also a supermoon. It's known as the Beaver Moon, Frost Moon, Deer Rutting Moon, or Turkey Moon. So I guess you can choose when and what you'd like to celebrate. So just have fun doing it. It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, transmitting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. If you listened last week, you heard Marlene from the Gallatin County History Museum telling us some local legends, but time ran out just as Henry Plummer was hanged by the vigilantes. We're going to pick up with the rest of our stories right now. So this week, it's Marlene's Stories Part 2.
Hi, I'm Marlene, and I volunteer at the Gallatin County History Museum. For the last couple years, I have taken people on special tours, and I tell stories in the evening for Halloween. This year's presentation is called Gallows, Graves, and Other Ghastly Tales. That was on the night of January 10th, 1864. And of course, the ground was completely frozen. And if you know Bannock, it's pretty rocky around that area anyway. They were not able to dig very deep graves. And so the three men are buried in shallow graves. And because they're so shallow, they put rocks on top of their graves. Well, for some reason in the Victorian age, the 1800s, it was common practice to take souvenirs from the dead. A lock of hair, or in the case of Clubfoot George, they actually cut his club foot off and put it on display. And for Henry Plummer, the physician in town knew that just recently he had gotten a bullet, taken a bullet in his arm. So he snuck back later and he undug the grave and cut Henry Plummer's arm off, retrieved the bullet, and as the yarn goes, he then just kind of threw the arm into the sagebrush and then headed downhill to go to a social or a dance, not knowing that his dog had actually picked up the arm and was following him to the social. A few years later, a saloon bartender is telling a couple of young guys at the bar this story, kind of laughing about it. The two young men are getting fairly drunk, and they start thinking, wonder what we could find. So that night, they leave, and they go up to where Henry Plummer is buried, and for a second time, his grave is vandalized. This time, they come back with his skull. And for a number of years, the skull sat on the back bar of the Bank Exchange Saloon in Bannock. Until finally, after a few years, the saloon burned down, and along with it went the skull. Back to January of 1864, the day after Henry Plummer and his deputies are hung, there is another knock on a cabin just outside of Bannock, and this time it is the cabin of Joe Pizantia. Some called him the Mexican Greaser. Now, it's not really known whether he was a gang member or whether he was just an undesirable foreigner, and they were just going to clean up the town one way or another. Well, I think maybe Joe had heard about the hangings, and he refuses to come out, and the vigilante men at the door say, Joe, come on out, or we're coming in to get you. And Joe says, de ninguna manera voy a salir. And he says, go away, I'm not coming out. And they continue to harass him until finally he grabs a shotgun, Joe does, and he shoots through the door, and he actually hits one of the vigilante men. Well, at that point, the vigilante men gather together and they figure they need a plan B. One of the leaders of the group was Wilbur Fisk Sanders. And he was the nephew of the governor of the territory, Sidney Edgerton. He remembered that they had brought a cannon with them from the east when they did their trip. And he tells the men, go to my uncle's cabin, the governor's cabin, and next to it, there is a cannon. They bring the cannon back, they line it up straight so that it's, you know, a straight shot to the cabin. And they load it and start just blowing the cabin to smithereens. Well, didn't take long, and they could see through a hole that Joe Pazanthea was mortally wounded in the cabin. At that point, a couple of men run in, pull his body out, and the mob went wild. They just start shooting into his corpse over 100 times. And if that wasn't bad enough, other men were then setting the cabin, which had been blown to smithereens, on fire. And then they pick up the bullet-ridden carcass and throw it into the fire. 3 days later, this is now January 14th, the group heads back to Virginia City. They know there are at least 6 of Plummer's gang members in Virginia City. And when they got there, they were able to gather at least 5 of them up, just unaware, you know, that people were even looking for them. The 6th one did get away, but later it is said that they did find him and hung him anyway. These 5 men are hung on a ridge pole of a building that's being constructed on Main Street. And then afterwards, they buried them in the boot hell of Virginia City. The names of these men are Frank Parrish, Jack Gallagher, who happened to be one of Plummer's deputies in Virginia City, Boone Helm, Hayes Lyons, and George Lane, who is actually Clubfoot George. I'm going to talk about Boone Helm a little bit. His name at birth was Levi Boone Helm, and he was nicknamed the Kentucky Cannibal. He, of course, was born in Kentucky, and it seemed like he had the devil in him even as a child. He was just very cruel and mean-spirited. He married young, and it was known that he was very abusive to his teenage bride. So much that his father saw the evidence and took what little money the family had and paid for her divorce and also sent her away. At this point, Boone is thinking, well, it's okay because I want to go to California anyway for the gold rush. And so he and his cousin head off to go to California. As they're traveling west, each time they would stop somewhere, Boone would get in an argument with strangers. And he seemed to enjoy quarreling. And then, after the quarrel was done, he'd pull out his gun and he'd shoot the person in cold blood. This happened a number of times, and his cousin grew to be very wary of traveling with him and finally told him, I'm going back home. You know, I've had enough of this. And as he turned to leave, Boone said, no, you're not. And he shot his own cousin in the back, yikes, dead. Well, Boone finally did make it to California, and he kind of blended in with the wild and rough crowd of the gold rush. But he continued to kill people wherever he went. We can honestly say he was a serial killer. We have no idea how many people he killed, but he enjoyed killing. Now, how about the cannibal part? Well, he bragged that once I had to eat my companions when I was stuck in a blizzard, and I'd do it again if I had to. Mm. Well, that particular situation actually did occur again. And this is when he finally has decided to leave California, because of course he had to keep on moving. He could never stay in one town mm-hmm. for very long because of killing people. And so he has decided he's going to go to the Idaho and Montana territories. And as he's in approaching Idaho, a terrible blizzard strikes up. And at first, he and his companion killed their horses once they dropped, skinned them and made snowshoes and, of course, ate the horses. And finally, his companion says, you know, I can't go any further. Mm. And as he's leaving, he hears shots from the camp and realizes that his companion has shot himself to put himself out of his misery. Mm. And Boone returns to the camp and sees that, sure enough, his companion had shot himself. And at that point, he eats his companion and then cuts his companion's legs off and wraps them in a shirt so that he will have provisions for the rest of his trip. And he did make it to civilization.
Yikes.
With all of these terrible, violent men that were hanged, you would think that there would be some angry ghost coming back to haunt people. Especially with Sheriff Henry Plummer, who actually, historians, some of them believe that he was railroaded by the territorial governor, Sidney Edgerton, and his nephew, Wilbur Fisk Sanders, because of politics.
Hmm.
Henry Plummer was a Democrat, and the governor, of course, was a Republican because Lincoln had appointed him to be the territorial governor. Henry Plummer was not a Confederate, but he definitely was on the Democratic side of politics. And so some people feel that they were just trying to get rid of him because they didn't want the gold to fall in the hands of the wrong party.
Hmm.
But no ghost of Henry Plummer has ever been seen. No, instead, in Bannock, it is the ghost of a sweet teenage girl named Dorothy Dunn. It was a hot August day in 1916, and Dorothy Dunn was wading in a dredge pond. And as the girls are kind of wading in the shallow shelf, suddenly they stepped just a little bit further, and it was a very deep, deep pond. None of the three knew how to swim, which wasn't uncommon in the early 1900s. A lot of people didn't know how to swim. And a passerby saw the girls kind of floundering in the water, and he goes, and he's able to pull two of them out, and he says to the last one, Dorothy, hang on, I'm coming back for you. But by the time he got back, Dorothy had disappeared into the dark, deep pond. By the time that they were able to find her body and bring it up, it was too late. She was dead. Her best friend was Bertie Matthews, and they spent a lot of time at the Mead Hotel because Bertie's parents were the ones that were operating the Mead Hotel at the time. Bertie's out on the main street. She's taken Dorothy's death really hard, and she looks up to the top window of the hotel, and there she sees her friend in that top window. And she knew it was her friend because she had on her very favorite blue dress. Over the years, many people have seen a young girl in a blue dress in the same window. The Bozeman Paranormal Society does an annual trip in the summer to Bannack because they say it never disappoints. There's always door slamming, cold breezes, children laughing, and some feel that they have felt kind of the connection of Dorothy. In Virginia City, it's Sister Irene, if you happen to be a guest at the Bonanza Inn. In 1876, three Catholic Sisters of Charity came to Virginia City to establish a hospital for the minors, and Sister Irene was one of the three. Today, the hospital was converted into a hotel, and it's the Bonanza Inn. And some of the guests claim that during the night, you can feel someone sit on the edge of the bed and maybe put a very soft, comforting hand on your forehead to maybe feel your, if you have a fever. And then when she gets up, she may even tuck you in. When she leaves the room, they say a kind of antiseptic but herbal odor kind of lingers. One of my last stories is going to be about Simone, who was, a working girl at the Boulder Hot Springs. This prostitute was either murdered by the manager near the old office, or some say it was some big wig businessman from Butte that murdered her. I guess they're not exactly sure. But if you're soaking in the hot springs, you can look up to a wing that's no longer being used, and you can see Simone staring down at you in a pretty white dress. Well, my husband took me there on kind of a surprise date. And after a nice dinner and a soak, I had to go to the lady at the front desk and ask her if she had any encounters with Simone. She said, oh, yes, everyone here that works here has had some kind of encounter with Simone. Either you can smell her perfume in the hallway or, you know, see just her ghost kind of float in the upper wing. And she says, my encounter was last winter. It was late at night and I'm working. It was about midnight, and as I'm on the computer, the stack of papers just started kind of blowing, and they'd kind of stop. There was one paper left, and I gathered them up, put them back in the stack, and go back to work, and pretty soon, the papers start fluttering, and again, it stopped at this one paper. And she kind of gets up and looks around. The door is shut. The windows are all shut. She's thinking, I have no idea what would cause the papers to flutter. One more time, the papers flutter. And at this point, she goes, aha, okay, Simone, I'll look at the paper, because it always landed on the same paper. She goes, I'll read the paper you want me to read. and it was a notice from the sheriff's department of a sex offender in the area, giving a description, showing a picture, and she said, "Thank you, Simone, so much for taking care of me and watching out for me." So in my stories, most of my ghosts are positive, friendly, and not meaning ill to the people that they see.
All right. Thank you very much, Marlene.
Thank you. Hope you enjoyed it.
I am recording this on Saturday, November 1st, and I think tonight I'm going to have a little fire and just in remembrance of my loved ones that have gone on. Again, my special thanks go to Marlene and to EarthSky.org. Thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work with Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to the volunteers and supporters of KGVM, and thank you for listening. You can always leave me a voicemail or text at 406-404-6246 and let me know if you want me to get back to you. You can hear this program broadcast on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, watch the skies, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams. November is National Native American Heritage Month. So let's have the Snotty-Nosed Rez Kids take us out with Yuxia. And that means you bad. Let's see you next week.
If you living off the land,
Yaksuya.
If you stick it to the man,
Yaksuya.
If you die for your people,
Yaksuya.
If you see it through the evil,
Yaksuya.
If you a storyteller,
Yaksuya.
If you listen to your elders,
Yaksuya.
If you speak your native tongue,
Yaksuya.
We forever young.
Yaksuya,
Yaksuya, sounding like a savage. I don't even understand him when he say that you the baddest. Survival is a habit. Rally after rally, I get it from my young. Bobby stunting like my daddy. We the streets like Aladdin. It's making me nostalgic. Look what a Dino lager me. That translates to magic. My mama who gave me knowledge. Like Sonny, you could have it. I don't mean I'm cooking dope, but I've been trapping at the cabin, man. It's word to my granny. If y'all don't understand me, I'm thankful for the salmon. I'm providing for my family and I'm living off the land. Like the ones who did before me, I'll be passing on the story of the ones who died before me, man. It's Sasquatch habitat. Call me Umber Gus. I get a city back, cause I'd rather have the bush. Up the res is in the building, they afraid we coming up. The future's in our children. Yaksuya.
If you a native academic,
Yaksuya.
If your craft is genetic,
Yaksuya.
If you're working both your spirit,
Yaksuya.
If you let them hit his hear us,
Yaksuya.
If you're urban space native,
Yaksuya.
If you carry what is sacred,
Yaksuya.
If your hair is long and braided,
Yaksuya.
You got me feeling like we made it,
Yaksuya.
Yaksuya. I hit them with the warrior dance like
Yaksuya.
They say I'm Michael Jackson fan like
Yaksuya.
They say I look just like my baba
Yaksuya.
My hair a lion's mane like Simba. I feel the spirits around that fuego. What you know about a savage? I ain't no rabbit's true. They call me Moonchild. Red moon's out. Hear the wolves howl. Nietzsche's on the prowl. Ride together and die.
die together. That's bad, boy. Go feel defended. Generation 7, reppin' Section 35 forever. Warrior just like heaven, till creator calls my number. Me and brother bring that thunder, so I culturate that eighth wonder. I don't want no statues, I prefer my carvings. Something I could rock with pride when that drum is calling. Lil Nietzsche, skinny, litty, belly, getting biggie, chiefin' in the shitty, feeling giddy, cause I'm yacht.
If you a master carver,
yak so yeah.
If your art is up for barter,
yak so yeah.
Don't give a damn about a dollar,
yak so yeah.
But you gotta feed your daughter,
yak so yeah.
If you gave your life to life giving,
yak so yeah.
If you trust in the children,
yak so yeah.
If you proud of your village,
yak so yeah. We about to kill it.